हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीअद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 121, verses 80 to 85. King Prachinabarhi leaves home and goes to Kapilashrama. The great sage Maitreya continued. The supreme devotee, the great saint Narada, thus explained to King Prachinabarhi the constitutional position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entity. After giving an invitation to the king, Narad Muni left to return to Siddhaloka. In the presence of his ministers, the saintly king Prachinabarhi left orders for his sons to protect the citizens, Praja Sarga. He then left home and went off to undergo austerities in a holy place known as Kapilashrama. Right, so, in other words, the ministers will take care. Ministers know how to run a kingdom. The point is there's supposed to be a king because ministers aren't supposed to run a kingdom. Right, they can do it temporarily. You know, temporarily may mean years. But they don't. That's not their position to do. Right? Their position is to assist the king. So, part of the assistance, they can run the kingdom. So, therefore, that was the point that being made before. Narada is saying they can run it. You go to the forest when your sons come back. But he was thinking, no, I'll wait here when my sons come back. Then we'll see everything's okay. Then I'll go to the forest. But the point is the ministers can run it. The ministers can do any of the fine training. And then when the son comes back, then they can run the kingdom. So then they don't have to worry about it. Right? So then he's understood that point, and now he's moving forward. Right? Because he's so materialistic that he needs to move on. Right? It's one thing if he's like Yudhishthira and all that, then you know they get everything organized because that's part of the pastime. You know, doing everything nicely with the material energy. So those devotees who are advanced, they'll do all those different kinds of things. But at the same time, it's because they can also just walk out. So for them, it doesn't matter. But for someone like Prachinabarhi, if he stays around, he may get bewildered. Now he's heard from Narada, he's fixed and everything, this is the time to go. And it won't be a disaster for the kingdom. Does that make sense? Staying would only be attachment. Yes.
It means that in our case also, because we are attached, it's better to leave everything behind.
As long as we can do it. With that we have to be convinced. So he's convinced that he can do it. Because you have someone who's very pious, very fixed in his duties and everything, and following authority. So if we feel that kind of thing, then we do. Otherwise we wait until we're confident. So in other words, when we're confident that we can do, then we move on, you know, like that. But otherwise, then we don't. Because the point is if one is in an advanced state, then one can follow any position. But if one is not, then the externals are more important. So the externals are designed that they work both for the pastimes of the Lord and the devotees, because then it has a nice form that it follows. You know, you have a time for everything. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it works for those who are not advanced, because the external form of it then will help them advance. It will create situations in which they will feel, you know, inspired to move forward. Does that make sense? It does both. That's the perfect thing. Is that? Yeah. Yes.
So it means the ministers, they take temporarily the role of executive power?
Yes, means they're already part of the executive power. It's just that amongst themselves they make a decision and do it, while before they would amongst themselves describe everything to the king and he'd make the decision. So they would just do it as a group. So that's the thing, is that it's based on the Vedic authority. So the standard is your monarchy, but oligarchy also works. Right? I mean, in the Vedic system, all the systems of social systems are working. Right? The Shudras are taken care of by socialism. The Vaishyas work on the how you say, your economic, you know, foundation and democracy. You understand? Then on the Kshatriya level, you have the monarchy and oligarchy. And then the Brahmins, they're self-managing. You know what I'm saying? They're not as such, what do you call it? Anarchists, because they're not against the system. They're the ones that establish the system. But they're self-governing, self-managing as an individual. It means each individual will follow the system because he's the one who is in, he was the keeper of the system. Does that make sense? So all aspects are there in the Vedic, but you have to know which one fits where. If you're going to run a country, then it has to, then the monarchy and oligarchy is going to work the best. Right? If you're working in the economic field, then the democracy will work the best. Does that make sense? You know, if you're working on the labor level, then socialism will work the best. Because the labor just want to be taken care of. So therefore, they get something that, you know, that they can spend on their own, but basically everything else is taken care of for them. They don't have to manage it, worry about it. Right? In other words, the mass of people are like the children of the state. Right? So children are always taken care of. They don't have to worry about these things. Does that make sense? And then for business, then people cooperate together and, you know, want everything, a say in everything. You know what I'm saying? This idea that everybody has a say in everything, that's one, is you could say that's the Shudras, because they all like to say, not that anything will get done. The Vaishyas want to say because they want to control it. Does that make sense? So the modern thing is a mix of those two. But actually, you have to make a decision. So therefore, governance then either works on a singular person making the decision or a group making the decision. But it's not democracy as such. Right? Because they make a decision for everybody else. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Just like, let's say you have a chamber of commerce. Does that mean something? Yeah. So everybody there has a say. Everybody says something. And then there's the chairman. In other words, the biggest, fattest, richest guy, he's the chairman. Right? And so then he'll see that it gets done. He'll give his experience. But everybody has a say because they're all the members of it. And what their decision affects them only. Mm-hmm. You understand? Mm. While on the other level, the you know, singular executive authority or a group executive authority, they're making the decision that affects everyone else. Mm. Right? It affects them, of course, but I'm saying, you understand the difference?
Yeah.
Like that. So you can say is that the oligarchy is working on a democratic principle. Yes, it is, but they have to know what they have to understand what is the needs and that of the people, you know, both on what is the tradition and the actual needs by religion, and they also have to know what's the situation at present, what is required. Mm. Does that make sense? You know, just like now, across parts of America and Europe, there's all these blizzards. It's a really strange winter. Mm. So then the government has to take steps that will be beneficial for the common people. Mm. You understand? But they'll make the decision. They don't get everybody out and have a referendum, you know, whether we should, you know, plow the snow or not. No, they just decide, okay, put in more things. You know, call out the National Guard. Do something that's going to, you know what I'm saying? It's way beyond. So they may bring in the army to, you know, take care of things. You know what I'm saying? So that's being done on that. So the democratic element is there, but it's not the prominent. Yeah. You know, it's amongst themselves, yes, it's democratic, but amongst the overall governance, it's not. It's oligarchy or, you know, a singular executive. Yes.
generally what we see in many governments today is that the oligarchy, like the Prabhupada gave the story of the golden goose, where they want the gold, they want the golden egg from the goose, but they cut the neck because they don't want to feed.
Yes,
the,
yes, of course.
And then in reaction, what happens is that the Shudras revolt.
Yes.
And then,
but the Shudras will only revolt if somebody from that level of government organizes them.
Right.
If no one's there to organize, it's just like the French Revolution had, because you had Robespierre. No Robespierre, there would not have been a French Revolution. People just, they'd still be grumbling. Mm-hmm. You know? Or then in, I think in England, who was the guy? Not Crowley. Oh, it was someone who brought down the government and established the parliamentary system. Right? Anybody knows that guy? Or a famous guy. But if he wasn't there, it wouldn't happen. Not just saying another person would have done it. You know, Cromwell, yes, Cromwell. Oliver Cromwell. Something like that. You bet it was Oliver Twist.
What we're seeing more and more is this.
Yeah, you understand? So the common person has to be taken care of because they can't organize themselves on that level.
Yeah.
Like that.
But generally, the oligarchs don't agree with that philosophy. And then
that's because the lack of training. If they're properly trained, then there's no problem.
How do you institute that training on that level?
You have to train Brahmins. Brahmins train Kshatriyas. Kshatriyas create the environment for the Vaishyas and Shudras are already Vaishyas and Shudras. Training, no training, they're Vaishyas or Shudras. A businessman is going to be a businessman. If he's trained, he'll be a nice guy. He's not trained, he'll be really cutthroat. Does that make sense? Okay. So Brahmins and Kshatriyas have to be trained. Otherwise, you don't have them. Gita talks about the Brahmins and Kshatriyas by quality. Vaishyas and Shudras, he talks about by skill. You understand? So you can be a great businessman and be a total, you know, nightmare. Right? But you can't be a Brahmin or Kshatriya if you're a total nightmare.
So we see that Prabhupada came to establish a class of Brahmanas.
Yes, that's the whole point of the society, is to establish Brahmanas.
In the Vedic system, there are many levels of Brahmanas. Brahmanas are not involved in different aspects of...
That's there, but still you have to create... But they're all Brahmanas.
Yeah.
But then the point is that has to be accepted, because Brahmana means Brahminical culture. That is also synonymous with Varnashram Dharma. So if we don't like Varnashram Dharma, it means we don't like Brahmins. You know? It's the basics, if you get into it, is very straightforward and simple. This whole, well, we don't know, and there's science, and so many options, that's the mode of passion. Passion means I don't know, because if I follow tradition, there's so many benefits, but then there's other sides there you have to work on. If you follow the modern, there's so many other benefits, makes it so much easier, but then you have the long-term problems. Like if you follow the Vedic, then yes, I have to explain everything to everybody until they understand it and trained. So if I don't want to use that, because to explain it means I have to use the Brahminical position, which is education, right? So therefore, for many, that's harder. Even though if you do it, you have the longer term and actually sustainable and permanent solution. But most would rather use a political kind of position, which will get rid of things right now, but then you constantly having to be adjusting your political position to keep up with the surrounding politics. And then, so it doesn't actually give a lasting solution, you're always at work, but it gives rise to engaging the modes of passion and ignorance, but at the expense of the mode of goodness. It's not like, you know, you're doing goodness and engaging passion and ignorance from the platform of goodness. It just means you replace goodness with passion and ignorance. So the Vedas are very straightforward, right? It's very exact. It's a science. Well, the modern is not a science. It's an art. That's why it keeps changing. Right? When you get up on certain levels of governance, then you're dealing with science. But those aren't the people that everybody's dealing with. Those are the people no one wants to hear about, because those are the ones that make the decisions, and this is the way it is. Everybody feels, no, I have an opinion, I want to be heard, and everybody should follow it. That's passion and ignorance.
You might
goodness is this is the way it is. So if one person makes a decision or everybody makes a decision, it has to be that decision because that's what the scriptures say. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, it's so much easier that those who are the most, who actually can affect the change and actually understand how what the change should be, they know the science, they're the ones that should make the decision. Yes.
And yet we see amongst the countless Brahmanas, the Prabhupada described the definition of a Muni as one who has a different idea.
Yes, but we follow Narad Muni. So we have our Muni. Yeah, so we don't have to worry like that. Because otherwise Muni means they're just jnanis. Right? So Narad Muni means, because he has his own philosophy, he's not a jnani. That he's giving the essence of actually the Veda. So if you want to be, if you want to take a stand like that, that we're Munis, we can all have our own opinions, then great. Then there's devotional service and going back to Godhead. It's a whole different topic. Does that make sense?
But in society, you're only going to find a certain section of people who are going to see that as their goal.
Yes, so therefore you cultivate them. They're the ones who will change the world. Change starts with one person. You know, this idea is you have to get the mass, but get the mass doing what? Because otherwise, see, if you don't know what you're doing, like we said, Robespierre started the revolution. And halfway through the revolution, what happened to Robespierre? Yeah, so therefore, then the point is the people get going, but now they're just destructive. You know, it's just like cutting, okay, the leadership shows that you cut off heads. We like that idea, so we just start cutting off heads, but they don't know what heads to cut off. You know what I'm saying? That's the point of ignorance. They don't know what to do. That's the problem. Then they just destroy everything. Then they get rid of, Louis because he's, you know, not very... nothing really gets done for them. And then because now they've killed everybody, now there's nobody left. So now then along comes Napoleon. Now they have more of a dictatorial leadership than they had before. You know, or you had the Tsar, and then you get rid of the Tsar, then you end up with Stalin. So now, but who was worse? You understand? So that's the point. If you don't know the science, then it goes down to the people. Then the people can only be organized, but once they get going, then you have this wave of ignorance. So that's why those who are intelligent don't do it that way. Does that make sense? Like that. Because who does it that way? Because you see, as if there's a change in the government done amongst the Kshatriyas, it's something you don't even know about. Right? You know, it's just like, who shot JFK? No one really knows. You know, there's the official story, but no one really knows. It's one of those you may never know. Because that's working on that level. You know what I'm saying? So it's small. It's happening inside. You know, who poisoned who? You know, who pushed who out of the window? You know, all that kind of stuff. You don't know. You understand? Because no one needs to know. But when you get the and so then nothing changes for the common person. Just who's in charge changes. But when you get the mass going and you have that going, then it changes their whole lifestyle, it changes everything, destroys everything. Because they don't know what's right or wrong on the social level. Otherwise, if they knew, they would have already been doing it. They would have you know, corrected the things, you know, 1,000 years before. Why let it run for hundreds or thousands of years before making an adjustment? Yes?
So then how did we get to this situation?
Because we follow what the common people do. Instead of what leadership does.
But at a certain, you know, certain point, a couple thousand years ago, that wasn't the case. So how did it degrade to this?
Because the tendency is you kill off leadership. Right? You know, it's just like, let's say, an example. Extreme example would be in Cambodia. Right? Or now it's called Kampuchea. Or is it went back to Cambodia? Huh? Cambodia again. Okay. Cambodia sounds better anyway. So Cambodia. Right, so they had one person there who went to school in, I think, Sorbonne in Paris, and, you know, learned all the revolutionary this and that. Now, he's an intellectual, having gone to the school there and everything like that. Now, he understands intellectuals are the ones that cause the problems. So when he went back to his country, he killed everyone that was known as an intellectual, and then he just keeps going. If you wore glasses, then why do you wear glasses? Must be your reading. Reading means you have knowledge, therefore you were killed. He killed 2 million people. Right? So then if you want to bring anything up, now what do you bring it up with? Right? You don't have anyone of stature or education to do it with.
Do people kill leadership because of envy? Is that their...
Basically. You know what I'm saying? Bourgeois doesn't really like anybody above them. You know, because it's all about money. They have money, they have as much money. You know, it's like one king mentioned they saw a new building that was just made. You know, like a mansion. And somebody was commenting to, I think, the king. You know, that says, is this your building? He says, no, can't be my building. That only the Rothschilds can build that building. Like that. Says, you know, we're kings. We can't build buildings like that. They're businessmen. They can build buildings like that. You know, they have... The king has more money than the Rothschild, but he has to spend it on governance. Well, the Rothschild, you know, they don't have to spend it on anything, so they can build a mansion. Does that make sense? You know, so they have the money, so that's how it comes up. They want to have more control, but they don't have, as you see, is when they controlled, you got the French Revolution, wipes out everything. So that's why it's not. It doesn't mean that the nobility is not corrupt. But the point is the solution's not, the solution for a corrupt, you know, how you say, one group of corrupt people is not replacing them with uneducated, untrained people who also go corrupt. Right. It's a matter of education is the only way you can correct it. So that's why Prabhupada said making Brahmins is the only way you can correct it.
So does Brahmins have to get involved in forming social structures? And
means they give advice to those who can create it, just like Chanakya. Means he knows how to run a government, but did he run a government? No. He looked around for someone who could run a government. Once he got him, then he trained him how to run a government. But it was his decision what to do.
So as Brahmins, is it a part of our duty to do that with the leadership of the world today?
It's like charity starts at home. Right? You do that, and then the leadership of the world will be attracted. We don't have to go out. They'll notice. It'll happen anyway, because you preach to them as individuals, not as government. You know, it's that powerful people don't like being preached to as powerful people. They like being preached to as individuals. You know, they just happen, that's their occupation. But they also have a life.
Is that how it happened with Chanakya Pandit and Chandragupta and those?
Yeah, because he's preaching to him because he's got the potential. Like, he was trying to make a king. He wasn't trying to make Krishna consciousness. But the point is how you organize things. That works that way. But the point is we're trying to make people Krishna conscious. So if they're Krishna conscious, they'll use their skills in Krishna's service. And it's time. You don't look at what's immediate. It took Chanakya 8 years to replace the king. From the moment he said, I'll see that you're replaced, it took 8 years. Right? And that was dynamic moving with things. That's replacing a whole government. Right? So, therefore, it takes time. That makes sense? So it's immediate. You have someone who has a material qualification, but then you immediately just try to engage them in some things. But the point is where's the training? It's about them being Krishna conscious. Right? It means you're trying to engage someone according to their nature, but they have to be Krishna conscious to engage that nature. So the first point is being Krishna conscious. You know, and if the focus is on that, then naturally with time, then whatever is their nature. Now, whether their nature is that or not is another thing. You know what I'm saying? They've been working, let's say, in big business or management and this and that. It may be they're doing that simply because occupationally it worked for them, but actually they prefer to be doing something else. You know what I'm saying? So you have to see is make someone Krishna conscious. Then with time, as they mature and feel confident, they'll naturally then engage themselves. because they know how to be successful. But it should be on Krishna conscious terms, not on other terms. Does that make sense? So, in other words, everything's long term. You work on immediate, then you everything's short term. Okay. So, yes.
Minister has to be Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, or mixed?
Generally, it would be Brahmanas, but it can be anybody who's qualified. Just like you see in the Hastinapur, then you had Vidura, who's technically a Shudra, but he's the prime minister.
Okay.
And you have Bhishma, who's a Kshatriya. You know, Drona, who's a Brahman. Kripa, who's a Brahman. And then, you know, others like that. So it just depends on... Point is who's the most qualified in the area and can deal with it in a Brahminical way.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, if they are Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, they'll be the most qualified of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that they have the skill, they have to have the character. Okay. To be a minister, you have to have the character and skill.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you're just giving advice, something like that, to them, you just need the character.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But if you're going to actually be on that path, you have the character and skill. So governance means you actually have to have governmental skill. But to preach, and that, you don't need managerial skill. You just need to be able to inspire others.
If we want to compare it, so our leadership should be in the category of oligarchy, ministers?
It means they're Brahmins. The GBC is a Brahminical body.
Yes.
Because when it says the highest managerial authority, that doesn't mean these are the highest managers. It means these are the authority of management.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a cultural thing. And if you come from the West, that definition would never, ever come to your mind.
Mm.
It just won't.
Yeah.
Because you have to have training to understand that the highest governance doesn't govern. The highest governance sees that governance actually is running according to standard.
Mm-hmm.
So that means those who are on the highest platform of understanding realization and can relate to management, not that they can relate, so they are comfortable overseeing managers that they are... managing according to Prabhupada's directions. That's the GBC. Then basically your Kshatriya level starts down at your temple presidents, project managers, and like that. Then amongst them, they can work together to, for their area or their locale, amongst the presidents, work out people that will work for all of them. Like, let's say for each temple to maintain someone to do legal work. That may be too much, but one temple has somebody, they're already taken care of, but the benefit goes to everybody else. And so if you want him to come over to your city, you pay the ticket over there and take care of him while he's there, and then he comes back. You know, like saying, you know, somebody watches Didi. So that's the ministers like that would be on that level. All that kind of governance would be on that level. Because the top is Brahmins. If you try to make the top into Kshatriyas, then it will only work if you have Kshatriyas. Yeah, so that's going to be a problem. Yes.
And then if you don't have Brahmins over the Kshatriyas, then eventually you get the system that Parshuram had to take care of.
No, the point is you'll get bureaucracy. Bureaucracy means Shudras lead the government. So the bureaucracy means that they're working for their own stability. For them, it's just a job. It's not about protecting the people. It's about they have a job and they want the authority because that then gives meaning to their job. And if they have a job, they get paid. And if they get paid, they're secure. So therefore, then bureaucracy can never be the top. Anybody who thinks it's the top, that's a Shudra mentality. Bureaucracy always works for Brahmas, Kshatriyas, or Vaishyas. On its own being the top, that's for Shudras. And bureaucracy is never for the people's benefit. Prabhupada said the only thing bureaucracy is good for is saying no. Right? That's it. So unless someone controls it and tells them when to say yes, then it's a useless form of government. Okay. Yes. Yes.
Maybe first with the Vedic perspective, Indian or its educational institution, from the Vedic perspective, the school should be treated as a kingdom or it should be treated as an educational institution because all are devotees.
Which? ISKCON. ISKCON's an educational institution. Then you need management within it. So we're managing within Krishna consciousness, and so therefore the top of it has to be Brahmins. You know, if we're talking about we're a government and we're, you know, like this and that, then good luck. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to verse 81. The word Praja Sarga is very important in this verse. When the saintly king Prachinabarhi was induced by the great sage Narada to leave home and take to the devotional service of the Lord, his sons had not yet returned from their austerities in the water. However, he did not wait for their return, but simply left messages to the effect that his sons were to protect the mass of citizens. According to Viraraghava Acharya, such protection means organizing the citizens into the specific divisions of the four varnas and four ashrams. It was the responsibility of the royal order to see that the citizens were following the regulative principles of the four varnas, namely Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, and the ashramas, namely Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas. It is very difficult to rule citizens in a kingdom without organizing this varnashram dharma. Like you see, is that when issues come up, the issues are always about how to not follow varnashram dharma. Issues are always opposed to varnashram dharma. You know what I'm saying? That's the nature of an issue, because it's the mode of passion. Mode of passion introduces something you don't require. The varnashram dharma simply is what's the nature of something. And then that nature being situated there, that gives you your rights and obligations. So everybody's taken care of because they have their position. Yes?
It seems that Srila Prabhupada always emphasizes varnashram in his books.
Always.
But when he was talking or writing letters, it was much less emphasized.
How you say? Let us just for a what do you call it? How do you say? A unspecific, generic example. Okay. Now let's say one had a family that's doing business. Okay. Now the son is born into the family. He's growing up. So, are you teaching him business? Are you teaching him how to behave?
How to behave.
So when he gets older, he can run the business. Does that make sense? So, if one comes along and the kid's 8 years old and you're not talking about business, but how to behave, how to deal with people, how to have a proper work ethic, then you can't say, but how, they're not talking business.
Because it bewilders a lot.
Because the point is Brahmins and Kshatriyas function on character. Prabhupada focused on the character and the Krishna consciousness. And for us, it's not just character, it has to be Krishna consciousness. So if you have character and you're not Krishna conscious, what's the point? Sometimes devotees get bewildered even by that, is that they're so worried about the character, even though they're coming from a background that doesn't support character, you know, like that. And the character that they say should be there is actually arbitrary, you know, like that. But the point is that that's what you have to focus. If the devotees don't understand the primary aspects of Krishna consciousness, like before, devotees understood the primary, but had no idea how to deal with the secondary. But they knew the primary was the all in all. And because of that, they were focused on Krishna consciousness, it grew, it expanded, so amazing stuff was happening. At the same time, because they weren't mature enough to know how to deal in a Krishna conscious way with the secondary, therefore then on the social and economic platform there's a lot of disturbance. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then it comes down to how to it's just a matter of time. As you mature in devotional service, then you'll be able to see how to engage the secondary. then naturally the varnashram and everything comes in. The Prabhupada's already talked about it, already trained about it, already given the direction. Now one has the character, now one can follow it. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. So devotees will say, oh, they followed before and that made a mess. No, they followed the primary. They didn't actually follow. So then we replace the primary with atheistic secondary methods? How is that successful? Point is, primary is what makes Krishna consciousness. And then for secondary, then, you know, we have our system, but it requires purity to use. Right? If you want to use modern systems, you simply, all you require is passion and ignorance. Right? To be inspired. But to actually get something done, you actually have to have material skill that you can actually do it. Where is that skill? Right? Because that skill, as we discussed before, 3 to 6 months, and a leader could go into an area, and depending how bad or bad it is, turn it completely around from it being a mess. Do we see that happening? No. Therefore, we don't have that kind of leadership. You know? Or we do, and they're staying out of the way. You understand? So that's the point. So therefore, if it's established the Brahmins, then naturally those who can do. Just like, let's say, did Yudhishthira Maharaj have to worry about the economics of a city when he sat up Indraprastha? He simply set up the structure and created like that a safe environment, and then Brahmins and Vaishyas came from everywhere. Right? Like that. So that's the whole point. You train, you have the Krishna conscious environment, then you'll generate Kshatriyas. Kshatriyas are there, then you'll attract everybody else. But if you work on attracting the mass by reducing the standard so they can relate to it, then what are you going to end up with? Yeah, nothing. Right? Like that. A very popular nothing. Yeah.
You know, we spoke a lot about establishing Varnashram because Prabhupada said it's very necessary.
Yes.
At the same time, Prabhupada wanted to create a class of Brahman.
Right.
And it seems everybody likes that idea that they should all be Brahmins.
Yes, but then do it. You know which end of the spoon goes into the water when you do Achman.
Now, if we were to do a census in ISKCON, who was to tick the boxes? Okay, I admit I am a Shudra and I want to work on that level. Okay, I'm a Kshatriya. Nobody wants that.
Because
everybody wants
they're not Brahman by ashram.
That's right.
Because for us, we're Brahman by ashram. By Varna, we're not all Brahmins. But by ashram, we're all Brahmins. So all Vaishnavas are Brahmins by lifestyle. And by understanding, realization. But by occupation, it's according to what your guna and karma of your conditioning is. You already have a particular body, particular mind and intelligence and ego. That defines your Varna. But ashram goes beyond. That's why ashram is called spiritual and Varna is called social. So on the social level, we are what we are. But on the ashram level, if you're a devotee, then that's Brahman. And that, as you advance, then it's more nicely situated as Brahman. Like that. So that has to be understood as what's what. Otherwise we say we're not this body, we're Brahman, so we can do anything. But if we can do anything, where is that anything? Where is it? It's nice to say, but where is it?
When the Bhagavatam says in Kali Yuga everyone is a Shudra.
That's being positive and optimistic and encouraging.
Despite that statement, we still have distinctions in society, right?
Yeah, of course. Because one's born, because how will you be born a Brahmin, Kshatriya, or Vaishya? That's the first point. How will you be born that? From Garbhodham Samsara. So in Kali Yuga, anyone does Garbhodan?
No.
So therefore, then they'll be born Shudras.
Yeah.
Now, by association, that's when they go down and become Alechas and Yadavas. So that's why they think everyone thinks the kids are so nice and so innocent, because they're Shudras, right? So they're in a higher position than the parents. But by associating with the parents, then they drop down to the parents' level. Like that. So in that case, when you're dealing with Malechas and Yavanas, Shudra is good. You know, but the Malechas and Yavanas, because of their prestige, there's this whole thing is, oh, I don't want to be the Shudra. Though basically most everybody has a job. So at least occupationally, most are Shudras. Even if by inherent nature they're not, it doesn't necessarily support them doing other things. Like you have so many people who would run small businesses. They'd be Vaishyas, right? But the big companies work to put them out of business. So then what do they have to do? They have to work for these big companies. So they become Shudras. But they'll be their managers and other things like that. So that's the problem with what we're saying, using the modern system, because the modern system is how to turn everyone into Shudras. And on the top is the Vaishyas. So Vaishyas own the hospital, so all the Brahmins are Shudras to them. You know, they control the government through their lobbying, their money, so they make the Kshatriyas into Shudras for them, like that. And then the common person are already Shudras, and basically they just should buy everything that you're selling. You know? So that's the problem in having, though it's always the push. The Vaishyas want to be the top, but they can't be the top. They can be the top on the village level because the village is based around cows and land. So they are the leaders there. So it's not a problem. So therefore, Nanda Maharaj is the Vaishya, but he's the king of the Vaishyas. Because he sees that all the other Vaishyas are protected and all that. But he's the Vaishya, he's not a king. Because otherwise, why is he paying tax to Mathura? The land actually belongs to Mathura. But because as long as they take care and pay their tax, the land's theirs to use.
When it comes to the ISKCON society, again, you know, devotees all aspire to be Brahmins, but
yes.
How many actually work and think on that platform?
On some level, they all do on some level, but not enough to use it in occupation. But to use it in devotional service in their own personal life, then basically everybody can have the ability to have enough to do that. But not enough to, let's say, you know, deal with organization and stuff.
From my observation over the past 40 years, you know, at the beginning everybody was at the temple. Today what we have is we have a very skeleton crew of Brahminical order, and we have a huge congregation.
That's
all sorts of aspirations.
Yes. That's normal.
So,
because Prabhupada said we start with the Brahmins, that's why there was just the temples.
Right.
Then it's supposed to expand in the community. Prabhupada never expected everyone to move to the temple. He was, because when he was doing League of Devotees, then it was a congregational-based preaching. So you may establish the temples, then the temples, when they're strong, they're supposed to establish congregational base. So you'd see that in India, like that. You have the temple and all that, and then you have the community, and it's not a problem, and everybody works nicely together. But in the West, these are foreign concepts. And so it's either you're in the temple, and if you're not in the temple, you're in Maya, or you're the community, and if you're in the temple, you know, you're not being honest. So, you know, it doesn't work. And if you, you know, it means if you're in charge, you're on the top of everybody. You tell everyone what to do. You can't, it means they can't balance anything. Because where is the balance in the Western culture? Where in history is there a balance? Who was balanced as a leader? You know? Like that. So that's the whole problem. Where is the role model? You don't have it. But in the Vedas, the Puranas, they give tons of role models of Brahmins and Kshatriyas so that someone can understand what to do. But in the West, there is no role models. There just isn't. You know, I mean, some guy makes off with another guy's wife. He makes a whole war about that, you know, like that for 10 years. And at the end, everybody dies and they don't get the lady anyway. You know, so it's like, you know, jai. You know, and then the other guy, then our protagonist, then, you know, he goes back and he has to go through all kinds of different things and this and that, and he gets back and he finds his wife is shacking up with someone else. You know, so I mean, you know, where is the role models here? You know? So that's the difficulty. So that's why one has to use these as the role models. And it doesn't help it if people are trying to say that, well, this is just a 1,000-year-old literature and it's just somebody, some guy just wrote it. We don't need that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
What we need is that, no, this is what establishes the standards, and therefore any discussion has to be based on what this is saying. And if that happens, then you spend 40 years trying to do that, you get somewhere. But if you spend 40 years trying to figure out how we don't need this, then you're still nowhere. Right? Nowhere man and the nowhere land. You know, the whole thing. Right? So it's very, very simple. The point is, this mode of goodness is simple. Passion complicates it. Because goodness is, here it is. This is what you do. Now you use your intelligence how to apply it to the situation. Here's the science. And the art is being shown by so many people. The culture is being shown by so many examples. That's the advantage of the Purana.
Goodness is based on self-control.
Yes. Not based on I'm the center. Mode of passion, it's all about, well, let's see, if we follow tradition, we have that stability, we have all these different things like this and that, so that's very nice. But I don't necessarily like my position in that, and I could get so much more, I feel, if I was in another position. So therefore, mode of passion, I can't decide. Do I want to follow the modern? There's so many benefits, but then there's problems. If I follow the Vedic, oh, then, you know, there's benefits, but I see more problems. Because I don't know what it is. You know, as we expressed, devotees land at the Calcutta airport, right? You know, it's not so bad inside. They walk out the front gate. What do they meet? Hundreds of people there that are trying to get them to take their ride. And, you know, and probably most of them aren't honest. Like that. And if you can fight your way through that, then okay, then you go, and then you go down the roads, you know, and everything, and you know, anyone and everything is on that road, you know, and then they get to Mayapur, and then outside the gate they see the same thing, you know, then they come into ISKCON, then there is a little less of that and all that, and then what locals they do see are, you know, cleaning the rooms, cleaning the bathrooms, you know, driving the rickshaws and stuff like that, doing the labor work. And so, therefore, and then that'll go on, festival will be over, they'll get back in their taxi, same insanity, go back to the airport, same insanity, and then fly off to wherever they're from. So now, for them, what are Indians? You know what I'm saying? And so then it's like, okay, well, this is nice, but where is it now? So the problem is you have to be educated to see this.
Would you say that to use the principles given in the Bhagavatam, in the modern day concept, you would say that Vedic means what is on the platform of goodness towards pure goodness?
Yes.
Can you say that as a principle?
You can say that as a principle. You have to be situated in goodness. And it means in this age, in other ages, you could be situated in goodness and remain there, like Prachina Barhi. He's doing a great job situated in goodness, right? But it's not enough. So we're only going to have the qualities of goodness by being engaged in pure goodness. That's why the Mataji's question, you didn't see at Prabhupada's time so much being introduced, because there wasn't enough goodness to establish it. Pure goodness, yes. So the preaching and all that went on nicely. But as far as organization and structure and all that, no. Because you need goodness to be able to understand it. And so if because it's the secondary social elements didn't work because people, the devotees weren't qualified, neither by their background nor by, you know, it's just like this. Let us say, for example, if the whole movement was, you know, persons like, you know, Ambarish Prabhu or Niranjan Maharaj or Shesha Prabhu, then if that was the whole society, then would they have dealt roughly with anybody?
No.
So then you also have to factor into it the backgrounds that the devotees were from. So the very individuals are going, oh, the Varnashram doesn't work, this and that. Hey, who was the one that threw the guy out of the temple at 9 o'clock at night in the rain with his wife and kids and all his luggage? Wasn't any of the guys that I mentioned their names. You understand? So that's the problem. And then we, you know, the saying, give a dog a bad name, then hang him. Like that. So that's the problem. So when goodness comes, then you can appreciate it, then you can establish it, then it can work. But it has to be accepted that this is the premise. Now, how to make this, just like if you have a meeting and this is the premise, we have to accept this, we have to follow, how to do that. Then you address all the issues, all the this, that, all the doubts, everything like that, that's fine. Spend some days, weeks, months addressing that. When that's clear, now here's how we do. You make your plan, you move forward, and then you're done. So like we said, 90 days, you've got the thing working. It's not rocket science. But you need the mode of goodness.
It's interesting how sadhana bhakti actually brings you to the platform of pure goodness.
Yes.
And then the rest of the day is passion.
That's on a good day. You know, a lot of ignorance going on. No, there's enough passion to make the ignorance move. So yes, you could say that. You know? Like that. You know, so less manana. Yes, but yes, it is. That's the problem, is that so you make the is in the temple and the devotional service, the direct activities, and then when one steps outside the temple, then one drops down, and when one drops into the indirect, then you only have the mode of passion to work with and ignorance. So nothing gets engaged in Krishna service. So you have the devotional service, and then there's my life. Well, what the Vedas are talking about is devotional service in your life are one thing. Like the Brajbasis, they also have a life. And it's all connected to Krishna. So we're being offered, we can live the same lifestyle as the Brajbasis. And we reject it. Oh, that's not possible. That's not, you know, that can't be done. Oh, that's this. No, that's that. And so many things, we just go on and on for the last 50 years. Let's say 40 years. Like that. And so then, where are we going to get with this? Nowhere. If you accept the premise that this is what Prabhupada wants, this is what happens, he's giving the direction, then now how do we apply that so that we maintain the culture? Right? We want Krishna consciousness, we want the culture. So how to understand it? There's a science there. As we understand, there's a science of philosophy. The same philosophy is the science of the culture. And the culture is the practical manifestation of that science. So if we accept that, then you discuss how to do that. That's what, you know, that's what devotee satsang should be discussing, not, you know, how to, that you should manage this and that. Previously, Ista Gosties used to mean you got together and read from Nectar Devotion and this and that. Now, then it just turned into Ista Gosties meant the temple president had some managerial thing and he wanted to introduce, and that was it. There was no more Shastra. But before it was, get out Nectar Devotion, read some verses, discuss it, you know, and it was more of an open discussion. Like what we're doing now, that used to be what Ista Gosti was like. Like that. Yeah. Yes.
Maharaj, as a person, or a small unit, you try to be in goodness, but as a whole, you're situated in ignorance. Society or in jobs, is it
going to be? The point is, but your world is based on your qualities. Because your world is what you perceive, what you interact with. Mm-hmm. So if you see, the point is people are in ignorance, but it doesn't mean that the science that governs them is in ignorance. Maya is not in ignorance. Right? You know what I'm saying? Maya is a devotee. She's doing everything in pure goodness. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, therefore, at the work that you're at, maybe everybody there's in ignorance. The whole purpose behind the job is in ignorance or passion. But you're in goodness because you're doing it because as a grihastha, then one maintains oneself by having an occupation. This happens to be your occupation. So that you're doing the work is due to goodness. Everybody else is there in passion and ignorance, but you're there because of goodness. You're going to use the money for Krishna consciousness. They're going to use it for sense gratification. Therefore, you're not only that, it's pure goodness. So the goal, you're using goodness for pure goodness. Now, the nature of the particular occupation itself, what modes are working and all that, that's another thing. That doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that doesn't matter. So that it does. So just let's say like a devotee, his job is he runs one of those machines with a wrecking ball and knocks buildings down. Now that's mode of ignorance. right? Because you're destroying things. But he's still in goodness because that's his job. Mm-hmm. You understand? So he's unaffected by... Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole point, is the world is our perception of it. That's where we're working. You know what I'm saying? But the actual basis is what the Shastras say. So what the Shastras are saying is in pure goodness. That's its intent. It may be presented through the medium of goodness so that we can relate to it. But it's actually meant for pure goodness. That's the real reason for it. Does that make sense? Okay. Yes?
You said that children are born as Shudras, but then they degrade due to bad association.
Yes.
And if we continue this point, then children born in the family of devotees...
Then they should be elevated.
How? Because it seems that they are born higher than parents, because if Garbhagriha Samskara and everything...
Yeah, but that doesn't mean you can't help. The parents having the kid, why are they having the kid? If we're talking about devotees, why are they having a kid?
Different reasons.
Different reasons. Okay, let's hear this wide, unlimited, wide range of reasons. It was a great movie, and they got a little overboard on it. And okay, that's one reason. Now we've covered that. Okay, now let's move on to the next reason.
Because they want to bring up a devotee.
Okay, they want to bring up a devotee. Okay, so now does that mean now if they're bringing up a devotee, they're the Lord and Master of all they survey, or they're servants?
Servants.
Yeah. So then, what's the problem? As a service, they're assisting, you know, Krishna and the spiritual master in raising a devotee.
My doubt is that, for example, if we are not strong spiritually enough to follow everything very strictly, like to be a very good example for a child in how to cook prasad, how to take prasad.
No, but that's, yes, that's there. But more important, there's something more important than that. It's the character. It's not so much the technique of cooking. It's that you're cooking it for Krishna. That's the main thing. You understand? That you try to see everything in connection to Krishna. Because the effect is quite strong, because on one sense, because there's the saying about the apple not falling very far from the tree. Right? On some trees, the branches are real low.
So, it turns out that children is a very good opportunity for parents to be...
Really more Krishna conscious, yes. Not by the externals, they're just making the show. Just like I've seen parents where if the kid wasn't there at Mangal Arati, they wouldn't be dancing. They'd just be standing there kind of, you know, doing the zombie or something. Right? Right? But if the kid's there, they're all dancing and this and that. But the kid knows that they're only making a show of it. So therefore, then they can't understand why doesn't the kid dance. Because they don't want it. The parent doesn't want to dance, so why should the kid dance? So the kid learns from the parent the mood, not what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You understand?
Yes.
Like that. So the whole point is it's about the mood of Krishna consciousness. That's what they'll catch. Then, if there's a, and they like that, there's a skill, they'll also learn that. The main thing they'll pick up from the parents is the mood.
Mm-hmm. So a child is a wonderful mirror for parents.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Wonderful and mean that it reflects doesn't mean that what they're reflecting is necessarily wonderful.
Yes,
yes. You understand? So it's a great opportunity. In other words, family life is a great opportunity to become Krishna conscious.
Yes.
If you use it. And if you don't use it, then it's a great opportunity to get yourself entangled and guarantee yourself another birth. like that. So it works efficiently either way. Does that make sense? So it's just your choice which one you want to take. That makes sense. So if these things are understood, then grihasthas will discuss these things and associate based on these kind of principles. Then, naturally, how to engage their attachments, how to engage their knee, all these different things can be then adjusted so that it's Krishna conscious. Right? Rather than just, okay, we have our temple life and this is my area and, you know, stay out of it. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's not progressive. Right? Devotional service is so powerful to kind of drag you along behind it, but it's so much nicer if you're, you know, happily going along. Does that make sense? So the science is there. One can do it. Can be inspired. It can be very nice. Or one can not follow it and just have the same kind of experience that all the karmis are having. If that's what you want, hey, that's easy. You know, it's easy to do and the results are very meager. You follow what Prabhupada's giving here and all that, it's harder work, but the results are way greater, exponentially greater. But because we don't have experience, we don't know what it is. Does that make sense? It's hard to work for something you have no experience of. Right? So, therefore, based on faith, one has to do it. Make sense? And then when one starts getting the results, then you have something to give. Does that make sense? To rule the mass of citizens in a state and keep them in a complete progressive order is not possible simply by passing laws every year in a legislative assembly. The Varnashram Dharma is essential in a good government. One class of men, the Brahmanas, must be intelligent and brahminically qualified. Another class must be trained in administrative work, Kshatriya. Another in mercantile business, Vaishya. And another simply in labor, Shudra. These four classes of men are already there according to nature. But it is the government's duty to see that all four of these classes follow the principles of the Varnas methodically. This is called Abhirakshana, or protection. Right? So since they have to protect the public, it means the Varnashram is the only way you can do it. Because just making rules won't protect the people. Right? And people are anyway classified into these groups. But the point is this is not methodical. Right, they're not following exactly, so there's mix of what they're doing and what others are doing. Right? Does that make sense? So therefore, they won't be satisfied. They won't be protected. So they have to follow according to the directions that are given. Then they'll work. So that's what the Kshatriya's business is, to see that that goes on. It is significant that when Maharaj Prachinabarhi was convinced of the goal of life, through the instructions of Narada, he did not wait even a moment to see his sons return, but left immediately. Because as a king, then the duties are taken care of. You know, but then for attachments, then he might be worried about these things. Right? But the point is that he's given up these attachments, so therefore then he can move on. Because he knows his sons will come back, they'll be qualified, they'll run the kingdom, everything like that. There are many things to be done upon the return of his sons, but he simply left them a message. He knew that his prime duty was. He simply left instructions for his sons and went off for the purpose of spiritual advancement. This is the system of Vedic civilization. Right? Because the spiritual is the primary. Then everything else is in support of that. If that's seen, then everything takes on a different nature. And so then it'll all work very peacefully, very progressively. Yes.
You're telling about character and Krishna consciousness.
Yes.
So what is the difference between it? I couldn't understand. Character and...
Character is used in Krishna consciousness. So you have skill, you have character, and you have Krishna consciousness.
But actually character means... how it's different from Krishna consciousness? It's a secondary...
Okay, let us say we have an artik lamp. Does that make sense? And we're in front of the deities during Artik, waving it around. Does that make sense? Is the lamp Krishna conscious? Is the lamp Krishna consciousness? Is the using of the lamp to serve Krishna, Krishna consciousness. Okay? You understand the difference? So therefore, you may have humility, but you use that in Krishna's service. Otherwise, you can be humble and not be Krishna conscious. Right? So the qualities are necessary for Krishna consciousness. The qualities make the skill work properly also. That's why in the Vedic culture, the focus is on developing qualities. Then depending on the development of the qualities, then you introduce skill. If you only start with skill and you don't have the qualities, then you have a problem. Right? Does that make sense? What is the problem with a, you know, with the, how do you say? Does that make sense? So in other words, you have the skill. That's just a matter of practice. You have that physical, psychophysical nature to do that. That skill, you can learn the skill. But the point is to apply it, you need the character. Does that make sense? You have the character, then it works. Otherwise, skill-wise, it'll work, but as far as the culture-wise, it won't. So you need the character. And it's because of the character, that's how you'll engage in Krishna's service. So that's why it also becomes hard to see how to engage my life in Krishna's service. Because the character lacks to be as the medium. So that comes from devotion. You understand? Devotion we can just do, but the point is it may not be come out so nicely. So with time it will come. Does that make sense? Yeah. We'll just get there, then we'll get there. Yes?
Sometimes you see devotees join and they take a lot of courses and they understand the philosophy, but they lack character.
Right.
So how... And especially now, there's more devotees becoming congregation and living in the temple.
Right.
So how can you help someone develop their character? Because you can see that they have everything minus the character.
Yes, but that's what's supposed to be discussed. When you're discussing pure devotion, it's about the devotional attitude and the character to follow that. So that's what should be in the classes, that should be at the home programs, that's what different people should talk about. So that's what the whole thing is about. When you have the community, then there's supposed to be programs happening in the community. Does that make sense? The idea is that at least once a week, if not more, you're having programs in your house and these things are being discussed. Like that. So that's where that training will come. So if that's not understood, then like you're saying, no training will happen. And so then the difference will be is before there was the more understanding of the Krishna consciousness and kind of that devotional character was there, so then preaching and all that goes on nicely. And then that becomes replaced with having material skills but not having the character and the devotional practice to apply it properly. So of the two, the first one is unlimitedly better. It's not the other one's an alternative. The first one's unlimitedly better. Then from that, if you know what you're doing, you ease it back into developing the character and the skills. And if you don't know, you use the political method, then you use the pendulum swing and swing it over to the other side. So if before it was about temples, it's about community. If it was about pure devotional service, now it's about being practical. If it was about character and all that, now we're also just being practical. I am who I am. So that's a waste of time. No one gets any benefit. No one will be satisfied because then it will swing the other way. Like that. Because little is it understood, but there's a lot of intelligent people in the world today who just are really sick and tired of kind of this modern liberalistic mood that doesn't get anything done, and they want to see something happen. I just heard yesterday in Germany, it's a very popular thing in different places in Europe, the European girls are marrying Muslims because they know it'll be a much more stable, you know, home environment than if they marry a honky. You know what I'm saying? Because the Western environment is all about, everybody's about themselves and there is no home environment. So they know that there is a family environment and the other. Maybe they don't like other things, but you know what I'm saying? And you know what the fun part is? We've been offering that kind of home stability since, you know, 66. You know what I'm saying? And we've thrown it out, and now people are going to others for it. Just like we throw out no public kirtan, no this and that, you don't want to upset anybody. And then what's happening? Yoga studios are having kirtan without us. They're chanting Hare Krishna. They're not the yoga studios is not chanting a Ganesh mantra on their own. They're chanting Hare Krishna. We're the ones going and chanting a Ganesh mantra. So that's the thing, is this Lord Chaitanya's mission. It's not our mission.
So what would be the most important elements of character to teach these people, the devotees in this
Lord, the third verse of Shikshastakam. Humility, tolerance, respect for others, not expecting respect for yourself. And the whole point of that is to chant, not for some other materialistic purpose. Those four, that's the essence of all the Dharma Shastra as far as the character goes. Everything else will come out of those. Start by respecting others and not expecting respect for yourself. That works really good. To do that, though, you have to be humble and tolerant. So they kind of go together. It's simple. That's the point. Krishna consciousness is really simple. It's very sophisticated, so it has unlimited explanations and expansions, but the fundamentals are really simple. You know, that's why when Prabhupada was talking with that big Sanskrit scholar, and Prabhupada asked him, okay, who's the supreme? And then the scholar says, well, that's a very difficult question, you know, there's so many this and that. Prabhupada called over an 8-year-old kid, asked him, who's the supreme? He said, Krishna, the supreme personality of Godhead. Prabhupada said, see? It's not so difficult. So that's the fundamentals you can teach to a kid. You know? The skills, you need to be more of an adult. But the fundamentals, the character, you can teach to the kid. That's where you have to be. But we're only worried about teaching the skills to the kid.
So how would you teach someone, say you meet once a week, and you have to help them to understand the essence?
Because that's what you talk about. That's what you talk about.
It's like when we, you know, before, when we were trained, it was like we almost were smashed into humility. So there's not this element.
Yes, so now you can do it with a little bit more, instead of you know, the 5-pound hammer, now you can use a crowbar or a shoehorn, you know, so it's a little more subtle. See, in other words, you explain to them intellectually what are the options and what's there. You do this, you get this. You do that, you get that. And then people start to think. And then after a while, they'll start to ask. New people will always ask. So that's the thing. We're working on the principle that, you know, some devotees have been around there in their 50s and 60s and they say, oh, nobody will accept this and this and that. They're so out of touch with reality. I mean, so out of touch. Young people are looking for, they want answers, they want something that's hard line, they don't mind. They're quite comfortable with it. They want answers, because there is no answers. You know what I'm saying? After the 50s, things work. From the 60s, things start to fall apart, because all this particular kind of liberalism. You know what I'm saying? Being liberal is fine, but you have to know where to apply it. You apply it in the wrong places, it doesn't work. You know, you apply it in governance, then things fall apart. You know, you have to be careful and include people and things like that. But it can't be you don't make decisions. So people want decisions to be made. So they're looking for that. And these are intelligent people. Like that. And so therefore, you just have to explain it. They'll take it. It's like this. You can walk into a new group of devotees, new community members, and discuss on the same level that we're talking here, and they would catch it and they would appreciate it. Because how I'm talking here, like when we're talking on these stronger kind of moods, not the more mellow moods, then let's say before we go into, you've heard of, like, in Europe they have this Pandavasena. It's college students. College students, high school students. It's organized by them. It's them. They like it when you talk like this. But if I ask God brothers and God sisters, oh, you can't talk like that. No one will accept that. No, you have to be, you know, this and that. You have to be more. And I'm right there with the kids of today, and they like it. They like that there's some direction. Someone has something to say rather than, well, you know, maybe, you know, kind of. They're tired of that. And they want to hear, this is what it is. Okay, great. Now let's do this. How do we get it done? That's the next part. So then you have to know the culture. Then you can explain, this is what's there, what's how we do that. Oh, okay, great. But it has to be, you can explain the culture, but you can only explain the culture if you accepted that it exists. Then, discussing it, this, seeing it, practicing, then you get some understanding. Because like Prabhupada said, just making rules doesn't get anybody anywhere. It doesn't organize anybody, it doesn't satisfy anybody. So you could go into a new group to explain this. If they have issues, you explain it. It's no problem. I've spoken like this in Connecticut. Right? Connecticut's known for rich people with a brain. Right? They have the temple there, and that's all that comes. No one comes who's not a professional. And I'm professional, I don't mean just, you know, little something. I mean big doctors, this, that. You, they're there. They're rich. They're stinking rich. They're in Connecticut. Right? And so then they'll come up with their points and that. You explain it. They're good. Because it makes sense. It's logical. It's consistent. So all you have to do is explain it. Like we said before, we're an educational institution. We educate people. We do that, people understand. People appreciate. We don't educate, we just try to, you know, wishy-washy. Well, you know, it's okay, you don't have to, and all kind of, well, you know, it's, yeah. Like this, it's just like, what do they need that for? Like that. That's the exact kind of people that people who are successful in the world avoid. They avoid such people. And then we're saying, that's our preaching platform? Does that make sense? So the point is kids have no problem. New people have no problem. Saying this stuff with the teenage, that's the problem. Everyone, oh, what do you do with the teenagers? They're the easiest. They're the easiest. Because they're thinking they got a brain and they want to figure it out. They don't have a direction, identity. They want something. You explain it. You show what? Okay, great. They're actually the easiest.
I think it's a problem.
That 2-year-olds, now that's a problem.
Like that kind of preaching, that, you know, now those people are devotees initiated and they lack that training. I think that's the problem.
Yes, so therefore you have to come in and preach. And if others take it, nice. If not, focus on the new people. They'll take it, and there's more of them. Does that make sense? Yes.
Where I stay, it's not Connecticut.
It's not Connecticut. You don't stay in Connecticut.
And,
that's a shock.
Yeah, my experience is that finding such intelligent people and people that are open.
No, but my point was is it's being said that no intelligent person would accept this straightforward philosophy.
That's dumb.
No. That's dumb. And this is being said by so-called intelligent people in the society that have these little papers, that have these little letters after them.
I've not heard that. But
I've heard it plenty.
But my experience where I am is that to find such an individual that is open to improving their character and improving their understanding and improving their knowledge is very difficult.
Are you talking about the common general duffers, or you're talking about the devotees?
I'm walking on two legs. Very
so then preach to the dogs. But they don't actually like it either. I tried that once. I was thinking like that. There was a dog sitting there, and I was there, nothing to do. So I'm looking at the dog, I'm preaching to the dog, and talking, you know, philosophy and all this. The dog was looking at me the whole time, you know, just like that. And after about a minute or two, the dog just, without any ceremony, just gets up, walks over about 6 feet, and then lies back down.
That's exactly exactly the experience I have with a lot of human beings.
Wow.
So
then you just talk about chanting Hare Krishna and taking prasad.
Thank you.
Like that. It's like, that's all. Point is engaged in something. And if they'll do more, then the point is individuals like that, it'll just take longer. So there's just more covering of ignorance and passion. But by doing some service, being exposed in any way, then they'll get purified, and then after a while, then these things will make sense to them. You know? And if they find that, you know, they at least make a comparison between chanting and being with the devotees and taking prasad and material life, and they take shelter of the devotees at the time of death, they'll go back to Godhead.
Sometimes we see, very knowledgeable teachers will come, and like pearls before swine, they try to teach on the level that you're preaching today to these individuals that could not understand anything besides taking the shot and chanting Hare Krishna.
Yeah.
And generally that results in some sort of disaster.
No, but then you have to adjust. You adjust according to your audience. My point before was that if they're intelligent, they'll appreciate this.
Yeah.
The professional people appreciate this.
But generally when they're
but
not.
If they're not, then you talk on the level that they do. You know, down in what works for them. You know what I'm saying? You know, in other words, we're devotees, so you don't shoot your girlfriend because she found her with another guy and then head to Mexico. Like that. We're devotees, so you just drop it and move on. You know, chant. That'll make things work. So you just shift your examples, shift the environment that you're working in. But the point is if we're based in a culturally based thing, you can do that. But if we're not working on a culturally based thing, then you can't work on that. Because the point is middle class, intellectual, kind of slightly educated kind of thing, then... they're kind of one of the narrowest in being able to deal with more people. They have the least range of people they can deal with does that make sense? It means they can be say hi to everybody, but to get real, they can't. The people are in lower social statuses. They're generally real with the people that they're with. You know? Does that make sense? It's not superficial. So if you can deal on a non-superficial platform, they're comfortable. And if you go above the middle class, also, they have that superficial side that they use for their profession, but they would rather have something real in their own life. You understand? So what I'm saying is, it works. Your tricky part is your middle class. Like that. And so of them, you'll have a wide range. So generally within the middle class, it's only those who consider themselves intellectuals are the problem. Right? Those who are actually intellectuals, and those who know they're not intellectuals, those are not a problem. So once they think they are, they're the problem. So in other words, Krishna consciousness can work for anybody. Like that. Otherwise, how is it Jagai Madai are taking up Krishna consciousness? So that's the whole point. So we don't have a problem with the rough and ready. You know, we have a problem with people who are, pretending to be asleep. You know the principle? Someone's asleep, you can wake them up. Someone's awake, they're already awake. But someone who pretends to be asleep, so... those who think they're smart, think they're this, think they're everything, you know, that's the ones you'll have problem with. So that's, we should not be cultivating that as a group or as a methodology. Because that's the group that is the least successful. Does that make sense? Like that. So you just adjust outside of that. And then it'll work. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
How important is menial service for people that join that are in the congregation? They're professionals, they're in the intelligent class.
The point is, are you doing menial service? If you're doing, they'll do it with you. The point is that if they're professional, then if there's someone with that can relate to them and doing menial work, they'll do it happily. They don't have a problem, because to be a professional, you have to start at the bottom anyway. You know what I'm saying? You come into a company, you don't start off with the big guy. You start off, with, you know, how you say, you know, down at the bottom, whatever that bottom is, but it's still the principal. So they don't have a problem with that. They don't have a problem with service. They know it's all based on service. You know what I'm saying? It's just like there, something comes up, you know, like, oh, what do we do? We need this. Oh, I'll get it. You know, so they just get up and go, and, you know, it should be that guy's supposed to do it. They'll get it. You know, it's just like, oh, we don't have menus and this and that. Oh, I'll get it. There's one on the table. They'll just get up, go over and get it. You know, what I'm meaning is they don't have a problem with menial service. Anybody who has a problem with menial service isn't actually on that kind of level that they think they are.
When you join an ashram or sangha gurukul, you start with menial service, and then
yes,
you have like a hierarchy.
But you have many. But the point is you train them how to behave. Their community. Where is not the menial service? You know what I'm saying? You require a PhD to change diapers. What about take out the garbage? What about try to make your wife happy because he did something stupid? Now, do any of those require menial service? Right? Like that. How many houses in the West have servants? Okay. Means who we're moving with, probably about you know, 0.001. Okay? Does that make sense? Okay. So that means who's washing the dishes? You know? Who's washing the clothes? Who's making the bed? So we just have to make him aware of how that connects to Krishna consciousness. Therefore, it's a valuable service. In other words, you're keeping your house clean, you know, because it pleases Krishna, not just because you like it that way. So now you're taking, you already have that nature to be clean. Now learn to do that for Krishna. Right? So then you'll also take it a step further, because now it's about clean, it's about not being attached, it's about just keeping, you know, basically what is necessary as a fundamental. Therefore, then you'll find with time, then inspired by that, they'll clean the closet, they'll clean out the garage. You know, all that stuff they've had in storage for the last, you know, so many years. They'll go and check it out and see if it's... And because we understand about charity and this and that, they'll give it... And responsibility. They'll give it away to people who can use it, rather than just either throwing it out or, you know... You understand? So the point is that already the opportunity is there. That's the thing, is you learn menial service and are comfortable with it either as a brahmachari, or you learn menial service from the wife. And if you don't learn it, you don't get anywhere either world. You don't function in the grihastha world, you don't function in the renounced world. You know, that's the bachelor. You know? They want all the facilities of the adult world, but they want their mom to take care of them. Like that. So socially, they're basically useless. Nobody really likes them. Their mom, you know, loves them, of course, but if she would do something else, she'd be much happier. Like that. Women don't like the guy. Right? But there's a possibility. If they thought that they could catch the guy and domesticate him, then they'll go. But if they think that they can't do it, there's no interest. You know, a bunch of other men, it sounds really great, you know, he's got the best of both worlds, but in reality, then what does he do when his mom dies? You know, so that's the whole difficulty, is that menial service is automatic in human dealings. You want to actually be successful either at work or on the home front, you have to have that attitude.
So that's why the boys need to go to Gurukul, because
yes,
mom always do it.
That's why. But the girl, now though the mom just let the girl sit around while she washes the dishes and does the clothes? No. But she'll let the boy sit around. That's why the boy has to go to Gurukul, and the girl doesn't. Because all the things to be learned in the Gurukul as far as menial service and all these different skills, they'll learn at home because the mom will teach them. That's
just, That's if the boy doesn't have the opportunity for Gurukul, can the father?
He can if he gets into practical stuff. Like before, was they go out farming, or they, you know, build a barn, or, you know, go out hunting. You know, they would do something like that. The stuff they do man stuff, right? You know, so then they could learn. You know, otherwise you can try the army. That has a tendency to, because they take it that you walk in that you're a girl, and then they're going to make you into a man. You know, from the first nanosecond on the bus. You know? Yeah, so it just starts off with that. You know? Does that make sense? So something has to be there. But in other words, boys turn into men from men. But they have to have the support of the women. In other words, because the women want that, that's why then it's that it works nicely. The women don't want it, then the boy won't tolerate being turned into a man. He'll keep going home to mommy. So that's the Vedic system. So you know what is there. So it's harder, but point is, you put in more effort, you get more. Yes.
At some point, we can see that when we talk about boys, when they mature, they could be happy both in the Gurukul and at home.
Yes. Someone who is happy in the Gurukul will be happy at home. Someone who's not happy in the Gurukul will be comfortable at home but not happy there, because they'll grow up and are they going to hang out with their mom all day? No, they'll go out with their friends. And so the mom's not going to see him anyway. That's the funny part. That's what we were meaning before, is that if you can function in devotional service and all that, then how you say, then it doesn't matter where you're situated. It doesn't matter. If you're Krishna conscious, it doesn't matter either way. Does that make sense? So that's the superiority of the system.
In the temple, devotees who are many years in ISKCON, I don't know, 10, 20 years, I and the new devotees who they want to do things and ask and everything, there is a problem because I heard personally like two different ministries saying recommendation for the present temple to just don't the senior devotees, let's say, for time at least. They are a problem for growing the community and everything. So don't take them or allow them to speak. But it's very difficult.
Allow them to speak.
Yeah, to speak with the young ones, because they say, oh, yes, I heard that from 10, 20 years. This never worked, never did.
It depends upon who it is. It's not about how long you've been around. Senior is, I mean, you have senior by age, of course, and by generation and all that. Those things, and those are respected. But when we mean senior, when we say a more advanced association, means, in other words, they want to engage people in devotional service. So the temple devotee who they themselves are happy, you know, doing all the menial service, they can take the new, you know, people and engage them. The person who'd rather not do it, he'd just rather sit around and pontificate, then yes, they should send them off to go do something else important. You know. You know what I'm saying? It's like you're having the program, the big program at the, you know, at the, what do you call it? At the temple there, and so then, you know, there's just suddenly some really important work on, what do you call it, Machu Picchu to get done, so they should go up there and see if, you know, like that. And then you can have your program. That makes sense. So that's the point, is that it's seniority means, in this case, for training, is those who are there, they understand, they're committed to, and they practice those things. Does that make sense? You know, that, I forgot what it was. It was some devotee, I can't remember, he was talking about. This devotee himself, he was good at, I think, interior decorating or something. So he happened to walk into the temple, and then there was a devotee there was a festival coming up. I don't know what it was, Janmashtami or something, and so they were decorating the temple. And so they just, you know, grabbed the guy and had him starting to do things. And then, you know, he's there and he's doing and he's trying to do it nicely and all that. And the devotee who was engaging him then started laughing. And he asked, "What are you laughing about?" He says, "You don't know it, but your material existence is finished. You think you're just, you know, making it look nice, but you're actually just, you know, finishing up your material existence." Like that. You know what I'm saying? So that means things worked before is because everybody would do everything. Prabhupada's definition of the temple president is all the duties are yours. So if someone's not doing something, let's say the pot washer doesn't show up, you're the temple president. It has to get done. Therefore, you do it. If there's someone else who can do it, you arrange it. But if not, you can't say, "Oh, no one came to wash the dishes." Then you should have done it. So it's not just being in charge. It's being willing to do every service that there is in the temple. That's the temple president. Just like we were saying before, she was asking about, you come in these professionals and all this and that. The point is the CEO of the company is the guy who's started at the bottom. The middle management, they came in as middle management, they're still middle management. Right? That makes sense. But the guy who's the CEO, he was in the mail room. He did everything in the company. And he worked his way up to the top. So he's willing to do everything. That's why he can be the CEO. But the problem is, we think we'll train middle managers and make them the top. It'll never work. Nobody does that. Absolutely nobody. So it's the character that you're training. How do you get a king? They go to Gurukul, you train them in the character, menial service, all these different things, the spiritual things. Then when they're trained in that, then they go and live that lifestyle in the kingdom, then they're trained under the ministers. Right? In the specific skills. Gurukul, if it trains them in those things, nice. But if it doesn't, it doesn't have to, because they'll learn under the ministers anyway. Does that make sense?
No, the only complication is the one president was asking me what to do with the devotees who have been long time coming to the Sunday feast or some different celebration in the temple, and it's like always talking negative.
Have some other program for them. You guys have been around for 15, 20 years, coming regularly. You know why you should sit with the regular guys? You sit in this room. This is special for you. Only you guys can sit in here. No new guys can come in this room. You know, it's a prestigious thing. And then you have, you know, one of the more senior devotees then serving there and talk with them. Because it's like this. You have someone senior to them, then they'll listen to them. They'll think they're senior. And then all the new people, they're out there, you know, just with the riffraff. And then you have all the other temple devotees and preach to them. You know, it's called the executive vice president. Try that. You know, or have two programs, or, you know, one for the one guy's been around there a million years and all that, and then another for these other guys, or have two different places, or, you know, you find something. Okay. Yes.
I'm trying to find out a good reason that there is for the leaders to pass laws every year. Is there?
According to here, it says to rule the mass of citizens in a state and keep them in complete progressive order is not possible simply by passing laws every year in a legislative assembly. So basically what they're trying to do is rule the mass of citizens. Mm-hmm. So that's why they pass rules every year.
There's no reason, not good reason.
No, it's that. That one actually thinks that one is ruling the mass of citizens.
Okay.
But as pointed out here by Prabhupada, that's foolish because it doesn't work. Unless you organize them and train them in character, then laws don't mean anything. Because the point is the laws have already been passed.
Yeah.
Like that. Krishna already gave the laws to Brahma. Brahma gave them to his sons, and his sons have given them to us. So the laws are already there. We don't need new laws. We need understanding of the laws and practice of the laws. The laws already exist. How we'll come up with laws? Because whatever law you come up with, the next year it changes. And then the problem is there's so many laws that are good that are lost, that no one even knows about them.
So Pandavas didn't do that. Yudhishthira Maharaj.
No, the laws are already there. You don't have to make laws. You apply laws. Vedic system is you apply laws. Non-Vedic system is you make laws.
So when they got together in assembly, they discussed how to apply those
laws. Yes, that's all. If no one's there in the court, they just discuss Shastra and stuff like that, or some practical things in the kingdom. And if if somebody walks into the court, they just apply them. They address what's on the agenda in the court. But in other words, you know, just that 6 to 12, that's when court's open. Somebody's there, great. If nobody's there, they just talk philosophy.
Time.
Yeah. How is training of Brahman is done? What do you mean by how? But you have to, it means that they learn what is Brahman. What is Brahman and what's the lifestyle of one who knows Brahman? You know that, then everything else is smaller than that. It's just like this. If you can run a factory with 10,000 workers in it, would you be able to run a pawn shop or a tea stall? Yeah. So therefore, if you understand Brahman and how the lifestyle of Brahman, then Kshatriya Vaishya Shudra is easy. You understand? Does that make sense? Yeah. There's plenty of people who work very hard to be good in governance. Or in business. How many people are working hard to become God conscious? Yeah, so therefore, that's the harder one. You have that, the other ones are easy. You can't get bewildered at the particular skill. That's the important thing. No, it's understanding Brahman and living a lifestyle of one dedicated to Brahman. That's a Brahmana. Does that make sense? Okay. Yes.
Maharaj, I've been listening now and I'm getting a bit nervous about the standard in ISKCON, especially applied to when you said we're kind of trying to be too careful, we're growing too careful and we're not really like preaching. Do you think it's because of a misunderstanding of some other Shastra or something that we read in Bhagavad Gita that we understand in one way and then not in the right way? Or
you have that, but see, philosophy, generally all devotees have a very clear understanding. Some may be more technical, some less technical, but basically all devotees have a very solid understanding of Krishna consciousness. Mm-hmm. Right? We're not the body, we're the soul is a servant of Krishna. Then Krishna is the Supreme Lord. Developing love for Him is the ultimate goal of life. The process is chanting Hare Krishna. Right? So basically all devotees will understand this. Now, and then how much they understand expanding from that, you know, the details, how much they can speak or understand of each of those aspects, then that will be up to the individual, like that. The difficulty comes when you're dealing with the religion, right, which is the culture. Is understanding what is the inherent nature of something. That we don't understand what religion is. We don't work on that. We work on mental speculation. The Vedas is no, there's an inherent nature of something. Because if we look around us, let us say, can we go out, can you find, if you go to the bookshop, can you find books on animals? What about animals, just nocturnal animals, or animals of Australia, or animals of Africa, or you know what I'm saying, or like that. And in these books, what will be there?
Knowledge about.
Yes, and what specifically? They're eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, and you can be quite confident that this is what it is. Like that. You know, it's like, how you say, koala bears will be eating eucalyptus leaves. You won't find them down at McDonald's. like that. You know what I'm saying? Now you will find seagulls at McDonald's. Right? The maximum seagulls I've ever seen in one place is the McDonald's on the wharf in Sydney. Like that. I mean, there are millions of them. Like that. They're not making any orders. Why should they go through the trouble like that? They just let the humans make the orders and then they come and eat. They're smart. You understand? So you can know exactly what they'll do. And why we do that. And we'll call that science. So human beings also have a nature. But that will say, oh, that's archaic. That's not science. That's inconsistent. Oh, humans have a nature. So what eating, sleeping, may defend, this works for them. Ayurveda defines that. And so you follow it, you're healthy. You don't follow it, you're not. Just like those animals, they follow their lifestyle, they're healthy. They don't follow it, they're not. So that's the thing, it's a science. And so if that's understood, then people benefit. If it's not understood, they don't benefit.
Why is it not vegan?
Because people don't come from a come from a scientific background, meaning from the position of their occupation. But as far as their lifestyle goes, they're not scientific at all. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Because in other words, these kind of things come up from people who are not actually practical in the world.
Is it something that is still getting better, or is it something that we're losing?
It depends. Individuals are getting better, and other individuals get, it's the choice of the individual. Do they want to learn these things and develop these things? Or do they just want to do their own thing? In other words, do you want to try to fulfill your own material conditioning on the terms of your material conditioning? Or do you want to fulfill the nature of your conditioning according to the terms of the Vedic, standards? That's all. Because the point is it's thought, well, I can't address all these things. Of course you can address all these things. You don't get better eating, sleeping, mating, and defending than in the Vedic culture. That hands down. You can't say that there's anything better anywhere else. Does that make sense? Like that. So, therefore, what's the problem? That's the point. So you have faith, you take it. You don't have faith, you don't. So the biggest problem, as we said in the beginning of the class, was the mode of goodness. Someone's not cultivating the mode of goodness, they won't understand it. Because passion and ignorance, you cannot understand the Varnashram system. You just absolutely can't. Because those who are situated as a lifestyle and in passion and ignorance aren't in the Varnashram system. They're outside. They're called tribals. Right? And tribal doesn't mean, by the modern definition, tribal means unsophisticated. In the Vedic terms, tribal isn't defined by sophistication. Tribal is defined by character. So, the modern culture is sophisticated tribals. That's all. Does that make sense? That's all. Doesn't make you feel any better. No, but the point is if you want to do this, you do it. That's the whole point. Self-realization means you as an individual can do it. And you associate with those who also want to do that, and then it's perfect. You don't need the whole world to be doing it for you to be doing it. You find those people who are doing it. Because we're a voluntary organization, then everybody joins, and everybody has their how serious they are or not, and how quickly they want to become serious or not, and everything like that. So you choose those individuals how you like, how they, similar to what you are. And that's enough. That's your world. Does that make sense? So then it's perfect. Even if you have one other person who's interested in it, that's good enough. That's all you require. And if nothing else, then Super Soul is into it. Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas are into it. Like that, so then you have plenty of association. Right? And I'm sure that your Winnie the Pooh bear You wouldn't mind. So he'll be cool. Right? Yeah. Okay. Now we should end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Sama Veta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nityananda Gaura ki.